Hey, all you listeners, before we jump into the podcast, I'd like to take care of a couple legal issues and a little forbearance of what you're about to listen to. Some podcasts are somewhat explicit and touch on some harsh topics when it comes to the mental health field. Listener discretion is advised. Also, for the legal purposes and the protection of our show and guests, we'd like to also remind you that all these stories that are shared by everyone on air are alleged events that have occurred. Please keep that in mind. And again, we enjoy having you here. So welcome and enjoy the show. Hey, everyone. How are you doing? Please come join me. This podcast is an open door for those seeking a little hope that'll spark a fire. This is Spread Hope Like Fire, the podcast. I'm your host, Tony the Beat. I bring this podcast, or as you kind of noticed, there was no Tuesday's episode, every Tuesday and Thursday of each and every week. You can get this podcast several ways: iTunes, the Google Play Store, SoundCloud, Overcast, and you can even listen to it on YouTube. Again, makes no sense, but it's available on YouTube. Thumbs that up, baby. Some ways that you listeners can support this podcast is rate it, review it, share it, Facebook it, Instagram it, Snapchat it, text it to a friend, tell your mom, listen to it with your grandma. Twitter this bad boy out. Let's get this community built. Also, I'd like to mention this is a listener-supported podcast, which is supported by lovely listeners like you. Head over to patreon.com/spreadhopelikefire. I just learned how to operate this website, so please head over there. All it takes is $1 to become a patron, and it builds a community that I'm hoping to help and support and grow and spread hope like fire. Again, head over to patreon.com/spreadhopelikefire. Become a patron for just $1. Now let's get into a little bit about my week. Sorry there was no episode Tuesday. I have finals this week and I am kind of losing my mind. Today was my last day for my last paper I turned in. 25 pages, that bad boy's done. So now I have the rest of the week to relax and hang out a little bit and record this podcast. This week on the show, Michelle is going to be our guest again today. She's going to be on for part two of part three. This is a three-part podcast. She's going to be sharing more about what happened that night and what she went through, talk about a little of her recovery and the aftermath of what happened after she survived the mass shooting at the Route 91 concert. Please, let's welcome Michelle back to the show. When did you guys find out what actually happened?
Well, we still to this day really don't know what happened or why. We just have the bits and pieces that we have to put together. But it wasn't until probably us ourselves, we had no media whatsoever. We just had our cell phones in there, most of which were dying. So we relied on people around us to tell us what they were hearing on Twitter, on social media, Facebook, you name it. But there were so many different stories and so many different theories going on. Quite honestly, we didn't know anything. So we probably found out around the same time you guys did, probably Monday.
And then, so from the Tropicana, you guys went back to the hotel. Where were you staying?
My group was staying at the Venetian. So when they opened the doors at 6 a.m., they pretty much were like, well, there you go. You're free to go. But the Strip was completely shut down. You couldn't get near the Strip. And so there was no Ubers. There was no taxis. There was no anything. No Lyft. No nothing. So you just kind of were like on your own. And mind you, the Venetian was, I don't know, almost 2 miles away. And so we just started to walk. And unfortunately, you can't get near the Strip. We had to go the opposite direction. So it's pretty much Meth Central that we were walking through. So luckily we had Richard with us, or else it would have been six girls by themselves, you know. we had Richard and Alec with us, thankfully, and we just started to make the long trek. We actually went over to Hooters and to see if we could rent a room and just lay down for a little while, try to grasp what happened, try to piece ourselves back together. And they had rooms available, but they weren't renting any rooms out. We went to Motel 6, which was full, and then we just started to walk. We didn't have any other option. So luckily this gentleman, who's just an angel on earth, we still have not found this man, but we put pictures of a truck like his out there on Facebook, and no one can tell us who he is or how to find him. I'm not sure how many people he helped, but he actually came and picked us all up and drove us back to the Venetian. So didn't accept any money, wouldn't accept anything but a hug. He was pretty amazing, and gave us water because we were just so thirsty. Half of us couldn't even barely move. We felt your body was so stiff and so sore. We're probably still in complete shock at that point too. I wanted out of Vegas so fast. I was, by then you're sobered up, you're ready to go home. I wanted to leave right then, but we ended up staying for late checkout and trying to get some sleep, which I didn't sleep because I was scared to death they were going to come to our hotel next. I mean, because we did not know what was going on. We didn't know if it was just one person, if there was numerous people. We heard there was bomb threats. We heard there was mass shooters at other casinos. I mean, we had all these different scenarios and we didn't know what was true. And I did not feel safe in that town whatsoever. I wanted out ASAP. But we did. We stayed and we left around noon and went to State Line to eat. And I did not feel safe till we were completely out of Nevada myself. And then I had swore I would never go back. But I've gone back numerous times, and it is my happy place once again. through therapy, I mean, that place was like my happy place. That's like the only place I vacation. it's my happy place once again. I'm not going to let that SOB take that from me. He took plenty from me that night, and I'm slowly getting it all back through therapy and just being close-knit with the people that who were there for me and who are still there for me with no judgment. And that's hard, as you know, to find somebody that doesn't judge you.
Yeah.
For ailments that you have no control over.
It's like we both said, it's emotional distress, like anxiety, depression, PTSD especially. It's stigmatized.
We're looked down upon.
Our society is, they look down upon people with mental disorders. Mental disorders, just that word, when you throw that out there, is just a stigmatized word. I had to learn that I have a disorder. I have no, like I said in my first podcast, we don't have control over it. It's not like we picked it. It's not like people with diseases pick their diseases, whether it be, leukemia or anything, really. I always go back to cancer for some reason.
Because that's like one of the major ones, yeah.
But it's a disease, it's a disorder, and we don't pick it.
No.
We get stuck with it, and it's hard to deal with. It's hard to deal with life a lot of the times, and
it's already hard enough to deal with that, but then you have to deal with being judged, with being, I don't know, what's the other word for that?
It's a prejudice, yeah. Really. It's a prejudiced view of people with these disorders. You look at people in general, we go through so much in life that life is hard enough and beats us down every day.
Mm-hmm.
And then to throw in a mental disorder, whether it be one or multiple disorders, then you're really fighting a battle. And I look at people, I mean, when people get crazy with me, just in general, you know, you're at a store or something, yeah. Or you never know what they're going through. Or people that are homeless, you never know what they're going through. And a lot of the times you drive by people or you treat people that you encounter that have a negative effect on you. Mm-hmm. I mean, I always think, my mom always said, you never know what that other person's going through. They could be going through something completely horrible,
right,
that they're just lashing out. And so, you know, just you don't let it affect you.
Well, I myself am guilty of that, you know, seeing a homeless person or, you know, looking down upon a drug addict until it was explained to me, until I had the pleasure, I will say, of working with quite a few employees that I worked with when I was a manager at a hot dog place, who are in recovery. And they are amazing people. And I used to think, wow, I used to really look down on people like this because they were drug addicts, because they were this or that. But hearing their stories and seeing their successes makes you put a different perspective on that. I'm no better than them. I was diagnosed with trauma and PTSD. I now have mental illness. I now have I don't really like that word, illness, a mental disorder. And I'm being looked down upon, and I don't like it. I don't appreciate it because it came from something that I had no control over. I didn't ask for this situation. I didn't ask to be put in this situation. I didn't want it. I didn't deserve it. And so now I get it. And it was explained to me in layman terms. I'll use that loosely as well. My little sister, who was a recovering addict, she told me, because I just never got it. I thought, you know, you're a drug addict. You can clean yourself up. You could do this. You could do that. And it wasn't until she explained to me what they have to fight every day. And it's like she said, you know the feeling when you're hungry and you're starving. And, you know, you don't feel satisfied till you finally get food and you're fed. That is what a drug addict or an alcoholic, that's what they fight every day, every hour, every minute, is that urge. And it's constant. And it wasn't until she explained that to me that it was an eye-opener. And I thought, well, here's me over here on my little pedestal thinking I'm better, and I'm no better. I just was lucky enough that I didn't allow that to take over. Because, yeah, I used to, you know, indulge. We'll use that word, too, indulge. I used to indulge in, you know, in medicinal things. Of plant-based, we'll just say that, back in the day. And there probably was a day where I really couldn't function without having that at least once. And, you know, people might refer to me as a drug addict. I'm a recovering drug addict. I mean, if you're going to point fingers and stereotype people, I mean, you can say that I was.
It's legal now.
Yeah, well, now it's legal. Now I might need it for my trauma brain and my mental disorder now. It might calm me the hell down. My boyfriend might appreciate that. But it just put a different perspective. It knocked me down a few levels, which probably I needed in the first place. But I always feel there's a reason why you have to go through the things you have to go through in life. Somebody really close to me told me that. And she's pretty amazing. And she told me that. There's a reason why God brings you through the things that he brings you through. And you might not realize why right away. But when you do realize, when it comes to light and he lets you see why, you're going to be like, wow, okay. And you're going to appreciate that. I don't know what I'm going to go through to be able to appreciate this horrific night, but actually, I'm going to take that back because I do know what I appreciate from that horrific night. I appreciate Hope and Faith and Vanessa and Lauren and Nicole because they were there for me every single day and they still are. And that is my forever bonded family. There's not a day that goes by where they don't check on me, where they don't tell me they love me. And they don't, they've never judged me, not once. That is amazing. So if I had to go through this night all over again, just to gain that closeness with them again, I'll do it. I would do it again. Because out of something so horrific, I got something so amazing. And that's enough for me, that's for sure. But I would like to get rid of my trauma brain. And I would like to get rid of the pent-up anger that I have. So much anger now. Because all my fear... At first, I was petrified. I was a 47-year-old. And don't repeat my age.
We'll omit that.
Yeah, and now you're older. Because, you know, it's another... Yeah, it's a new year. That was 2017. But I was a 47-year-old woman who was deathly afraid of the dark. I didn't want to be out in the dark because I didn't know what was around me. I didn't have any control over that. And I don't like that. Anyone who knows me knows I like to be in control. Got issues with that. And yeah, I have a lot of issues. I'm sure all my friends are like, yep, she's got issues. Yeah. Loud and clear. Hear you loud and clear. I don't have a filter and I have lots of issues. So it's probably a t-shirt that's going to have to be made for me or it'll be on my tombstone. She had a lot of issues and she had no filter. I get it. But that's me. But, I walked into that office completely broken and, she doesn't even recognize who I am now. And that was just 8 months ago, which seems like a long time ago, but it's really not. 'Cause today's the 8th anniversary of, that. So, and, when I told them I was going to go back and retrace my steps, so I was going to go back to Vegas and I was going to get my life back because that was after I wrote 2 suicide notes and didn't want to be here anymore. But then I realized that all the pain and suffering that I was dealing with, I was just going to put that on somebody else. And I wouldn't want to do that because it was pretty lonely going through it, and it was really hard, and I don't want to ever have put that on my child, who's so amazing, or on my boyfriend, who literally stuck by me through all that craziness, who is amazing, or anybody else for that matter, the girls that I just mentioned, or even my other friends who I love dearly, or my boss, who is so amazing. I cannot not mention him. Him and his wife are so amazing. That night, his wife was texting me the entire time I was running. And she was just letting me know every feed and every update that she got because I couldn't open anything. I don't have Twitter and I didn't have Wi-Fi, obviously, when you're running for your life. You don't stop to hook up at a Wi-Fi there. And that's the last thing you want to say. Well, where's a hotspot? And she was letting me know everything that I needed to know to stay safe as well. So I have some pretty amazing people in my life, and I don't really want to let them down. I want to be somebody who my son could be proud of. I haven't really fit that shoe yet, but I'm thinking when I finally grow up that I will. So that's my purpose here. So I need to fill that shoe, so to speak. So now I just need to get well and deal with the after effects, which are what we're supposed to be talking about today. Anxiety and the depression.
So nice segue.
Yeah, there you go. That's a long way to go around the block just to get across the street, but we're here now.
I see a lot of posts that you guys do. I think that not just like all of you guys post how you're progressing, mm-hmm. and you've spoken about the bond you guys all have.
Yeah.
Like, I always see you guys at there. Like, you still go to concerts.
Yeah, you have to. We have to. Like I said, I went back to Vegas with Vanessa and two complete strangers at that time, Lauren and Nicole. I didn't know who they were at all. And when I decided that I was going to go back to Vegas, I think Vanessa had brought it up in our IM group. And Nicole and Lauren were part of that. Never had met them face to face. And I was like, well, if you're going to go, I'm going to go. And so I booked a room for us at the Venetian. And we decided we were going to book a flight. And against my therapist and the psychologist's recommendation, I went to retrace my steps 6 weeks later. We went to Veterans Weekend because I wanted to see the memorial site in its entirety before they tore it down. I wanted to see all 58 crosses the way they were. And I wanted to walk that venue because I wanted to find myself. I wanted to find the pieces that I left there because I've never been a weak individual. But at that point, I felt like I was. I wasn't living my life. I was functioning. I was getting up in the morning and I was faking pleasantries and I was barely making it through my day. When driving by that ocean twice in one day, all I wanted to do was just drive off that cliff. I didn't want to be here. I didn't want to deal with everything that I was having to deal with. And I was pretty much at my breaking point. And so I felt like I needed to go back so that I could reclaim what that SOB took from me. He took my smile. He took my sense of security. He took my happy place. He took who I was. So we booked a flight and I met Nicole for the first time at the airport when we went to go book our flight. She was there and I think we spent all 15 minutes together. And then I didn't meet Lauren until the day we were flying out. When I went through security and then she came through security and we met. And we all stayed in the room together. And that was probably the best trip I ever made to Vegas. And that includes all the drunken bachelorette parties and all those wonderful memories that I have. But yeah, this because it needed to happen, because it made me want to come back and live life again. And it stopped my nightmares. We were having some pretty bad nightmares every night that I was being shot and wasn't surviving from any of those. And so we joined a Facebook group. There's quite a few, actually, for Route 91 survivors, and there's some pretty inspirational people on there, hopefully, that I will get to meet this weekend at their Survivor game, but who were not ashamed, and they were having just as a hard time as we were, if not harder. There was inspirational ones because they were shot and going through what they were going, which was, you know, 1,000 times worse than what we were going through, and still doing better than I was. That was inspiring for me. And just the love and support that we got from this forever bonded country strong family, that was amazing for me, and that was enough. And I would read their testimonials, how they went back and they traced their steps and it stopped their nightmares and it gave them peace of mind, and that's what I wanted and that's what I needed to do. So that's what happened. That started the ball rolling for our healing.
Recovery is a funny thing. Just recovery from trauma, recovery from drugs, crazy childhoods.
I don't have the drug background, but I have the crazy childhood.
Yeah, it's.
And I have the trauma.
The common thing that I see pull people out of the darkness that are on the brink or that are just suffering in silence is the community, is the foundation that they build, the connections that they get. that they make, not get, make, or get, you got connections.
You're right.
You guys are all bonded by this event, and it's all, I think, the major thing out of recovery is making sure that you stay connected, mm-hmm. and that's why I did bring you on right. as a guest, because there are people out there that have no connection. My mom's friend, she has a friend that her granddaughter was there, and she is no longer friends with anybody that she attended the concert with. She right. won't talk about it. She's completely changed. It's changed her. Mm-hmm. And I hope that having you come on and talk about it brings those people that are disconnected from this community into connection with this community.
Right. Well, we have our own Facebook page here. I think it's Northern 805 Route 91 Survivors, but we want to start doing meet and greets around here. We've actually met quite a few survivors that live here that we had no idea about. It's a great connection. So, you know, your mom's friend's granddaughter would be more than welcome to come and talk with us. We would love to spend time with her and help her. I mean, we've been there. We know, I mean, who knows how much help we would be to her, but we would like to at least try or extend a helping hand out to her, because we've all been there. I would really love to strengthen my bond with my friends that I was there with, but I did that. I pulled away. I became reclusive because of my depression and because of how I had to deal with it. They didn't want to hear about it. They don't, you know, it's easier for them to deal with it, to not deal with it. And you'll have to respect that. When it comes to, if that's how they deal with it, you have to respect that. And so I would really like to heal those relationships and heal, pretty much just heal those relationships and get back to where we were. But I have to heal myself first, you know? And I don't really know, you say recovery, but are you ever really recovered? I mean,
recovery is, that's also a strange word. Recovery lasts your entire life.
Yeah.
You're always recovering. I think with just my anxiety and my depression, I will always be in recovery. I know addicts use that term recovery as a term that they live with. It's, they're always in recovery. They're always working the 12-step program mm-hmm. or whatever program they're on. And mental disorders are there's some people that get over it, and there's some people like me that I think I'll live with it for the rest of my life, and it's always being in recovery, trying to figure out the next step that you're going to make mm. to advance your recovery, because it's always a touch and go game. It's always, you take one step forward, and then sometimes you take ten steps back.
And you could be doing great for years, and then boom, knocks you on your butt again. But do you know what triggers yours?
Or everything. Everything triggers yours?
See, for myself, I can say, you know, this is a big trigger. So Route 91 was a big trigger for me. I didn't really realize that I had anxiety, but I guess I always have. I just dealt with it really well. And, but this is, I mean, this, I know my triggers now for this. And I know what my triggers were for my childhood. And so, luckily, I can avoid those things so that I can help my anxiety. But for you, if you don't know what your triggers are, you're fighting a battle every day, all day.
Yeah, my triggers, one of my main triggers is change. As a kid, change is always bad. Mm. So I can't decipher change being good or bad. Change is just bad. It can be the best change. Like, my first podcast was on graduation and the graduation blues. most people that graduate either high school or college, we don't know where we're going.
Right.
And it's a big change. And so instead of, I didn't appreciate the moment. I remember walking across the stage. I appreciate that. And that made me happy for the 2 seconds. After that, I was anxious. I didn't know what, but I knew where I was going. Right. I was going into grad school and I was going into something that, a profession that I have a real passion for. But it's still, that's a big trigger is change. Mm-hmm. Every day change happens and it's constant. So it's a trigger.
It's constant.
And so I got screwed with a big trigger and it could be, I still have to learn deciphering what's good, what's bad change. But I mean,
how do you do that?
It's hard. I mean, doing this podcast is a trigger because it's change.
Right.
But I think I have to, this is a labor of love now. So I want to hear other people's stories and I want to get other people's input as to how they cope, how they deal with mental disorder.
Right.
And talk about the topics that we need to talk about so that we can destigmatize mental health.
Yeah.
There needs to be more platforms to talk about this topic, and it's not being talked about. It's being swept under the rug.
Exactly.
Because no one wants to deal with it.
Right.
And the Route 91 concert, I think, was a big thing, not in just your life, but my life too, because that was the first time that I had people I knew at a concert that I didn't know if they were coming back.
Where it directly affected you.
Yeah, and before it was just like, oh, there's just another shooting, and
it's sad, and you feel bad, but this directly affected you because your friends were there.
Yeah, and so I think building a community, which is what I hope this becomes, is a community, just like you guys are building a community with the Route 91, but I want to build a larger community to where we can support one another. I mean, we all struggle with mental disorder, and no one, like you said, you didn't understand anxiety.
No, I didn't. And like I said, I used to tell my boyfriend he was being dramatic, and it wasn't until I suffered from anxiety that you realize you don't have any control. It's not something you pick and you choose. It's not like you go to the grocery store and you're like, I'm going to get some anxiety today and, you know, and some broccoli. No, it's debilitating. It really is debilitating. It can consume your whole life. It can make you be reclusive. It can make you so depressed that you don't want to be here anymore. A lot of the, you know, unfortunately, a lot of people don't snap out of it. I was lucky enough where I have a pretty amazing therapist who is so patient and so kind, and not to mention my loved ones and my friends that helped me out of my darkness. But honestly, for the most part, I had to battle it myself. I didn't even tell my therapist about my notes until after the fact, because I was frightened that she would try to hospitalize me or institute me, you know, because that's what they do with crazy people. You didn't know that, Tony.
No, studying as a to become a psychologist. I do know it's part of our job. We have to make sure you guys are okay.
Right. I didn't want
medication. Well, not you guys. We have to make sure we're okay. So, I mean, I don't want to exclude myself from the mental health community. But, yeah, it's where we have to make sure our clients are number one.
Right. And from day one when I walked in, they were like, okay, well, how about a sleeping aid? How about a this aid? I don't want any medication. I'm very stubborn. Anyone who knows me has a little clue of that. But I refuse medication. I will not take medication. This was a battle I needed to fight on my own, and I knew that I could. Having gone through what I went through as a child and surviving that, I knew that I could survive this. I just needed the time to do it. If that makes sense.
No, that makes total sense. that has also become how our society deals with mental disorder is, mm-hmm. well, here's a pill. Like, yeah. I remember going into...
It's a pill for everything.
Yeah, I remember going into the doctor's at one point, and it was... I had to get my physical, and so I was just going through it, the questions and everything, and depression had come up. I'm like, I don't really care. I'm like, yeah, I'm depressed, and here's a pill for it.
Yeah.
Okay. Well, that alleviates the symptoms, but... It
doesn't deal with the problem.
It makes my life, when I was... I am on pills, so...
Right.
But it just puts you at a constant level of... You don't have ups or downs or emotionally. So you can't get excited. Right. You can't get sad. I mean, I still get depressed, even though I am on medication. But it's...
It's not the severity.
It's not... Yeah, it's not as crazy as it was. Because I would just... I could freak out randomly. And, mm-hmm. But it's not alleviating the problem.
No. It's like putting a Band-Aid on a pussy cut.
Pretty much. And that's what I learned in therapy is you have to go through and process your problems and fix the issues. Otherwise, your house is going to fall down.
Yeah.
You can only tape up so much of your house, as my therapist would say, before it just completely falls down and you're left with nothing. And that brings a lot of people down to where, when I say house falling down, is people committing suicide.
Mm-hmm.
You hear about that, and that's even stigmatized. I know so many people that if you bring up that topic, it's, oh, they were weak, they didn't deserve... They dehumanize people that have committed suicide, like Robin Williams.
Yeah.
He was a really big inspiration to me through, because I deal with my anxiety, depression, everything through comedy. So I think I have your normal comedic mind where mm-hmm. you try to make everybody else feel happy.
Right.
Because you're just so sad.
Yeah.
And... him committing suicide, I remember I was still in my undergrad, and I was in, like, I think a philosophy class, and people were talking about it, and just the severity of the words that were spoken. I mean, I don't, not to censor anybody, but it's just, like, people are just so, they don't understand that either. It's, oh, he was weak, he didn't deserve to live, he didn't deserve anything, he didn't. What a poor excuse for a person. I know people that would love to live, and it's this constant pain that no one knows.
Right. And that's just their ignorance. Sorry, that's just how I feel. It's their ignorance, because they don't know. It's easy for us to talk about something that we don't really know about because we hadn't gone through it. It's so much easier for us to say those things.
And I'd like to thank everyone for listening this week. It has been a very big pleasure and honor to talk with Michelle and have her share her thoughts, her emotions, and be so candid and open about what she went through and her struggles that she still is going through to this very day. I encourage everyone to come back next Thursday. Michelle will be our guest once more, and she will be finishing up her story about that night. I'd like to thank Michelle once more, and all you listeners, please, I encourage everyone to continue the conversation. I have a Ask Me Anything posted over on my Patreon account. I encourage everyone to head over there, ask me some questions, get some answers, become a patron. All it takes is $1. That's patreon.com/spreadhopelikefire. And I hope to see you all over there asking me tons of questions, and I will be sharing them as they come in. Hopefully I get some. If not, that's okay. Become a patron. It takes $1, like I said. Sound like a salesman here, but head over there, patreon.com/spreadhopelikefire. For Michelle and Tony the Beat, I'm Tony the Beat, and I hope to see you next week. Have a good weekend, everybody. Spread Hope Like Fire is a production of the Spread Hope Like Fire Foundation, a 501c3 nonprofit. As always, I like to remind everybody, the things that we discuss upon the podcast are not a substitute or a replacement for seeking treatment and getting professional help. If in fact you are struggling with your mental health, we urge you to please reach out to your community and see which professionals are accepting new clients and get that professional help and talking to that professional that you need. This show is intended as a educational and informational psychoeducation of the field of psychology. For Spread Hope Like Fire and Anthony G, I'm Anthony G, and we will see you later.